Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Oh, we did it again. Another great Friday show. I don't know how many of these in a row we can do. We've got a great lineup for you today. Second hour, Dr. Carrie Gress will be in here to talk about how to fight like Mary. We're going to talk a little bit about her book, The Marian Option, wonderful new book, and about what Mary teaches us about how to maybe reclaim, might be the word, reclaim or rescue our or contribute to the rescue of our civilization. That's going to be a great hour. This hour is going to go really fast. I just feel like it's going to be a fast hour. We have our good friend and senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, Jimmy Akin. Hi, Jimmy.
Howdy. I detect a little bit of punning there.
A little bit, maybe.
Talking about this being a fast hour.
Right, because we're going to talk a little bit about fasting.
Yeah.
And from all kinds of angles, I do think that part of our – maybe what has brought this to mind is some very successful fasting that you yourself have been doing in terms of weight loss fasting. Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that, how that came about and how the experience has been.
Okay. Well, so like many people here in America and around the world – I've struggled with weight issues, and that's been a long-term thing. Mm-hmm. The standard diet advice did not work for me.
Yeah.
Did not work for me. And after my wife died, I had a big life upheaval, not just with that, but then within a year I moved out here to California and my whole life changed, and I was dealing with all the grief and everything and all the stress of a new life here in California. And I gained a bunch of weight. I mean, I'd always had, you know, for some time I'd had weight issues, but it really was exacerbated after those events. And I don't know what my highest weight was. It was at least 318 pounds though. And so I went to my doctor and I said, what should I do? And my doctor at the time said, well, you should go on the Atkins diet. And I said, the Atkins diet, the one that everyone has been confusing my last name with for the last 20 years, I'm supposed to go on his diet? And he said, yeah, you'll probably lose more weight on a high-fat diet than on a low-fat diet. And I said, wait a minute, high-fat diet? What are you talking about?
Oh.
And so I got the book for that, and I went out and I bought a bunch of what I understood was healthy food, and then I brought it home. And then I read the book and discovered that all of the food I thought was healthy was not on this diet, and I had to throw it all away. because what the Atkins diet is it's the flip side of the standard high-carbohydrate, low-fat diet that has been pushed
right
in America for the last 40 years that has accompanied the huge rise in obesity and diabetes.
Yeah.
And so it's a low-carb diet that has more calories from fat and protein. And it was quite successful for me for a time. I lost about 70 or 80 pounds on it, and then I hit a plateau.
That's extraordinary, though. But
well, okay. It was successful, and I was very rigorous about it. But I hit a plateau, and this is something that tends to happen with any standard eating plan type diet, where like it happens with high fat, low carb. It happens with low carb, high fat. It happens with various other combinations. You tend to hit a plateau, and I was stuck on this plateau for like 10, 15 years. Could not get off of it. I would go up a little bit, down a little bit. Nothing helped. And I guess about not a year ago, but 9 months or so ago, I was at 256. And I was talking to my current doctor, and she had been recommending that I try intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. And specifically, even before that, she'd said, cut out all the snacks and eat only three times a day. And I said, but that's contrary to all the diet advice that says you need to eat like six to seven small meals a day and have this grazing strategy. And she said, actually, the results medically show that it's better. But I didn't listen to her at the time. But eventually, you know, she brought it back up, said, try intermittent fasting. And I said, okay. And so I did. I worked my way. I didn't leap into it and do it all at once so that it would be a system shock. But I eased into intermittent fasting. And we can talk about that if you want. But basically, now I eat one meal a day. And I don't experience significant hunger at all. I've been amazed at that.
Yeah.
And I've now lost 70 pounds since then. So like right now I'm 186, which is actually—
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's actually less now, a little bit less than the average American man weighs, even though I'm a little bit above average American male height. So things are progressing well. I still want to lose another 20 to 30 because I decided I don't want to use current averages as the benchmark. I want to use historic averages.
You mean back when people were healthy?
Back before the current wave of overweight and obesity problems.
Yeah.
So still have some work to do, but working on it.
Has all this given you any insight into it's? First of all, it's fascinating to me that this method works so well, and it's also it has a long tradition. Like fasting is an ancient practice,
right?
And then I wonder from that if this kind of fasting has given you any insight into or more appreciation for or something about religious type fasting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One of the things as a result of my experience with this, I've been digging into the subject of fasting and I have a much greater appreciation of it. It's something obviously that's part of the Christian tradition and the Jewish tradition and other religious traditions. And it's actually a fundamental part of the human experience. You know, sometimes people will wonder, well, is it healthy? I mean, isn't it dangerous to do this?
Right.
And, well, there can be specific things you need to watch out for. Fundamentally, humans are designed to fast. I mean, you think about it back in caveman days, there's not a dependable food source. And so sometimes cavemen have a lot of food, but then it would run out, you know, like in the winter or something.
Yeah.
And so they would have to fast. And so it's not just our species that is like that.
I mean,
virtually every species on the planet has these feast-famine cycles. And so it's part of the way God designed our species. And if you think about it, there's a really quick proof of the fact that human beings are designed to fast. We get fat.
Okay.
Because the whole purpose—
I'm the proof.
Well, the whole purpose of storing fuel as body fat is to tide you over when you don't have food and have to fast.
Uh-huh.
So the fact that we get fat is that we have the ability to store fat is precisely to compensate for the times we need to fast. The problem is today we've gotten so good at controlling our environment. We have continuous food.
Right.
And so we're not doing the fasting. And so the fat deposits that we're building up for times of fasting are not getting used.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed that now they have these new programs where you can get fast food delivered right to your house.
By a robot even.
And my wife was saying, like, it was too hard to just drive up to a window. Now, there's a way which you can – our society makes it possible for you to be eating constantly.
And
an invitation I have accepted far too many times.
Well, we all have.
Well, let's take a quick break, Jimmy.
Okay.
And we'll come back. I do want to explore the spiritual side
Absolutely.
Of fasting with you when we come back. Jimmy Akin, our guest this hour, fasting, our topic. We'll be right back after this with more Catholic Answers Live.
Call and ask Jimmy your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Are you coming to the Catholic Answers Conference this September?
You guys put on a great show, so it's well worth coming.
Very powerful, very motivational and moving.
I think it's awesome. It's been really amazing to get to know people from all across the country.
Every time somebody's speaker finishes, I feel like I want to cry just because of how happy I am.
It's been pretty phenomenal. Very educational, enlightening.
This year's conference is September 28th through the 30th here in beautiful San Diego, and we want to see you there. Seats are still available, but act now because they are going fast. Call us today at 1-888-291-8000 or visit CatholicAnswersConference.com now and reserve your spot.
This is where it starts, and it definitely has started for me.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In John 19:25, Jesus looked down from the cross on his mother and the Apostle John and said, "Woman, behold your son." And to John he said, "Behold your mother." From that hour, the disciple took her to his home. Certainly, if Mary had other children, he would not have given her to the care of John. She had no one but him at this point. Evidently, Joseph had already died. But Jesus had more in mind than simply her care. He was thinking of us. John's mother was living and was actually present there also. But sacred tradition tells us that in giving his mother to John, Jesus was giving her to the whole world, which completed his total gift to us. Besides his own life, she was the most precious gift he had to give, and he held nothing back. Besides his suffering, no one suffered as much as she did that day. She remains a model for every Christian of fidelity and love, but most of all, she is our mother. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
And welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I told you it was going to be a good Friday show. We're talking about fasting with Jimmy Akin, who is using the fasting as a method, essentially. But I want to ask you about religious fasting. Do all religions use fasting, or what religions use this?
Virtually all of the major ones use fasting. The only one I have read, I have not verified this, I've read that Sikhism does not have a tradition of fasting, but all of the other big ones do. And Sikhism is actually not that big, but Hinduism does, Buddhism does, Islam does, Judaism does, Christianity does. And really even the small ones tend to. I mean, every religion tends to have fasting for religious purposes.
And so do we actually see it in the Bible? I know about Jesus. I don't mean to, but let's go to the Old Testament.
We see fasting in the Old Testament. We have fasting associated with the various Jewish holy days, most notably Yom Kippur.
Okay.
Is a day of complete fast, and you're actually among Orthodox Jews, you don't even drink water on Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement.
Is that from sunup to sundown, or is it from
24 hours?
It's a full 24 hours. Yeah. Okay.
Then also, I understand a lot of Jews fast on Tisha B'Av, which is the anniversary of the destruction of the temple.
Oh, okay.
And we see it with various other celebrations on the Jewish liturgical calendar in the Old Testament. We also see it as part of the nation's sort of periodic cultic life, in the sense of like, suppose there was a war coming up, or suppose there was some big tragedy that was happening or that was about to happen. And so the king and or the priests would proclaim a fast and say, okay, everybody, we're going to fast on this day.
Oh, yeah, right.
As a way of entreating the Lord to be merciful to us. Mm-hmm. And so that would happen. So those were kind of occasional fasts rather than pre-scheduled, annual fasts.
Yes.
You'd also have like if people had suffered a defeat in battle, they would fast. Or if somebody died, it was customary to fast. Which is kind of the opposite of what happens in our culture in some ways. I know, like, whenever anyone in the family would die, all of my grandmother's relatives would bring over all – and friends would bring over all of this food.
Right.
But back then, one of the customary things to do when you were mourning someone is to fast. And so like when David and Saul – when Saul and Jonathan died, everybody fasted for like 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's kind of an inversion of that when David's son by Bathsheba, the first one, dies. David is fasting, before the child dies in treating God to let the child live. And then when the child dies anyway, the servants are kind of afraid to tell him because they think he's going to commit suicide. You know, if he's already been fasting, what's he going to do now?
Oh, yeah.
And instead, he gets up and washes his face and eats. And they're like, what? And David says, well, I mean, fasting is not going to bring him back. I'm going to go to him, but he's not going to come back to me.
Yeah.
So
what would put it in a person's mind or even in a whole religion's mind that praying is more effective if I'm fasting? David's idea there is I'm going to fast because that will intensify my prayer.
Yeah.
What is that based in?
It's kind of interesting. The relationship between fasting and prayer I got to tell you a funny story. So back when before I was Catholic, when I was Presbyterian, there's not really a sustained tradition of fasting in contemporary American Presbyterianism. They don't really fast. And if anybody does, it's just a purely personal thing and it's almost never talked about from the pulpit. But it's there in the Bible. You know, I mean, Jesus talks about it. And so I was once talking to my pastor at the time, Presbyterian pastor, and, you know, about, well, like, what's the purpose of fasting? Because it seems to be clearly penitential, but there's not a big penitential strain in a lot of contemporary evangelicalism. And so his idea was that you fast in order to give yourself time to pray.
Oh, so it's just a time thing. I don't have to cook so I can pray now.
Yeah, and it's like, no, I think it's a little more than that. I could schedule prayer time and still eat.
Yeah, right. You know? People do it all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like there's something more going on than that. And actually, the Bible talks about what that more is. If you look in Psalm 69, verse 10, the psalmist talks about how he humbled his soul with fasting. And that's part of what you're doing. You're not celebrating. You're humbling yourself. You're not, living large and enjoying life. You're doing something that's painful or at least requires self-discipline.
Yeah.
And especially if you just started it, there's going to be some hunger. Mm-hmm. Although surprisingly, that goes away very quickly. But you're doing something that, you know, requires self-discipline. It requires you to deny yourself. It requires you to not do what you ordinarily do. And so it's a way of lowering yourself before God. And that is something that humility is something that we know God responds to. You know, a broken and contrite heart you will not despise, O Lord.
Right.
And so that's part of why fasting is often used as an accompaniment to prayer.
Yeah.
But it can be done for other reasons as well. it can be done and this is sort of related to prayer, but it can be done not when you're asking for some particular benefit like, you know, rain or something like that. It can also be done just to say, I'm sorry for my sins. You know, this is how I'm showing I'm humble.
Right.
I'm sorry for what I did and I want to show that. It can also be done just as an act of spiritual discipline. It can be done with an orientation towards the future because by learning to deny yourself now, you build the spiritual muscle to deny yourself later when temptation is striking.
Right.
So if you can say no to your temptation to eat now, that can transfer to your ability to say no when some other temptation is pestering you in the future.
So
there's a bunch of spiritual reasons.
I've learned to accept the suffering or whatever of the discipline of the fast. Mm-hmm. Now I'm out in public or something and somebody says something mean to me and I may have the immediate response to snap back or something, but I've learned a little bit of self-discipline.
Right.
And I might say, no, I'll accept this little bit of suffering too.
Yeah.
Gives you a little – okay. So Jesus goes out to the desert and fasts for 40 days.
Yeah. How about that?
Come on. Now, you laugh. But could he truly have fasted for 40 days? I mean –
This is something I always wondered about before I had any experience with fasting. I had always been under the impression that this was physically impossible – to do a complete fast for 40 days because Luke says he didn't eat anything.
Yeah.
So I'd wondered, could this have been some kind of partial fast? Well, Luke seems to rule that out.
Yeah.
And could it have been – and one thing you'll find in a lot of commentaries, they'll point out, well, the number 40 in the Bible is often symbolic, so maybe it wasn't literally 40. Maybe it's a symbol or something.
Right.
But
it could be both. It could be both literal and a symbol.
Right, like, it could. And also it could be a miracle because obviously, you know, he's the Son of God. And so – but I had been led to believe just from our culture, I guess – that it was impossible to fast for 40 days. And so it would have had to either be, you know, an approximation or a symbol or a partial fast or a miracle or something. Totally not true. It is totally, totally possible to fast for 40 days. People do it all the time.
Really?
Yeah, they really do. In fact, it's possible to fast for much longer than 40 days. The longest fast on record is something that was done back in 1966. It was by a Scottish gentleman named Angus Barbieri, and he was extremely obese. He was 456 pounds. Mm-hmm. And he went to the hospital and they said, you know, he said, I need something, you know, I got to get this weight off. And so they said, well, we'll treat you as an inpatient. We'll put you on a fasting regimen and we'll get your weight down some. And so they did, and it worked. And he said what a lot of people who've struggled with weight issues do when they discover an effective technique, let's keep going.
Yeah.
And so even though he'd already achieved the initial goal was, he said, let's keep going. I'm feeling great. And they said, actually, you don't need to be in the hospital. You're doing great. You can go home. So so he went home and he'd have medical checkups every couple of weeks, and he ended up fasting for 382 days with no food at all.
Well, first of all, I got to say, you're supposed to like forget about your diet at Christmas, right? Everybody says, oh no, it's Christmas time, I have to eat that. So that guy, at least one Christmas, he went right through.
Yeah.
So the consequence of that for his health was what?
He did great. He went from 456 pounds to 180 pounds. He was totally healthy. All he had during that time was water and vitamins. And he did great. And they did a follow up study with him like 5 years. They wrote him up in medical journals. You can find the study online, and I've read it and stuff. They did a follow up study. He kept almost all the weight off. 5 years later, he weighed 196. So he's still less than 200 pounds.
Yeah.
Gained 16 back. But that's more than a year of no food.
And it's also extreme. And so we do have this – I guess there's a cautionary side to what the church teaches about fasting, about fasting and any kind of maybe self-mortification.
Right. Now, this guy's example was extreme. And you know what else? He's doing it under medical care.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't suggest that anybody for either spiritual or medical reasons – just haul off and do any kind of extreme fasting.
No.
You don't want to do that. You want to – if you have any kind of medical issues, you want to do it under doctor supervision. Mm-hmm. If you want to do it for spiritual reasons, you need to do it under the counsel of a spiritual director.
Yeah, you really do.
Any kind of significant thing. Yeah. Now, if you say, I'm going to skip some snacks today, well, you probably don't need to talk to your doctor or your spiritual director about that. But any kind of sustained fasting you do, because there are risks on both sides. Not just on the physical side, but on the spiritual too, because fasting can be abused spiritually.
Oh, that's something I hadn't thought of.
Yeah. There are some passages in Scripture that deal with this. One of them is in Isaiah. It's in Isaiah 58, if people want to look it up, where it talks about how even though people are fasting, they're ruining the spiritual effect of the fast because of the sinning they're doing.
Oh, okay.
But more to the point, in Jesus' parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector, one of the things the tax collector does is he spiritually prides himself on the fact he fasts 2 days a week.
Oh.
And so it can be an occasion of spiritual pride. Yeah,
I got it. All right, we're talking fasting with Jimmy Akin. We may take some calls, we may not, because there's still a lot to get to, Jimmy, this hour. Next hour, Carrie Gress here to talk about Mary and her what she's undertaking in the modern world. More after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Call us now with your question.
Hello?
On Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
I want to share my small experience with a Protestant friend who would tell me that the Eucharist is symbolic, and I would argue with her and show her biblical proof that it is the body and blood of Jesus Christ, and why do we honor Mother Mary. And even though sometimes she doesn't like to listen to me, I try to be an example to them. Sometimes we don't have to speak or say words, but we can be an example to others.
This is apologist Tim Staples, and I'm here to tell you about the most exciting and innovative Catholic book in years. In today's world, people from countless perspectives pose challenges to our Catholic faith every day. In conversations, through the mass media, on the internet, and more on the infinite collection of social media platforms. There's no getting away from this daily onslaught. We as Catholics need to stand strong to be prepared to mount a daily defense, to respond to the many challenges that we as believers are presented with every day. To that end, my good friend and apologist extraordinaire Jimmy Akin has come up with what will surely be a go-to resource for years to come, a daily defense. A daily defense takes up a different challenge for every day of the year, 366 in all, teaching you how you can defend the faith and give answers to Catholics and skeptics alike. And it's user-friendly, with challenges and answers indexed alphabetically by scripture verses or by topic, so finding the answers can be quick and easy. Order your copy of A Daily Defense today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, Friday edition, continuing our long string of excellent Friday shows. I am joined by Jimmy Akin this hour, and we are talking about fasting. It almost seems like it's something we avoid talking about, like death or something. I would think that there's a lot of people who are almost embarrassed of the religious thing of fasting.
It's sort of culturally dropped off our radar.
It has.
I mean, historically, this has been a part of every culture on Earth.
Seems like if anybody needs it, our culture might be the one, too.
Well, yeah, because we live by historical standards in an age of excess.
Yeah.
And despite the effectiveness of fasting for things like weight loss,
yeah.
And there are other health benefits, too, which we can talk about if you want. But despite those, there are financial incentives that keep it from being talked about more than it is, because big food has an interest in selling you food. It doesn't have an interest in promoting the idea of not eating or not eating as much. Instead,
they're advertising in the magazines and on the television.
On television, on the radio, and everywhere, awash in food advertisements.
Right.
And so the whole thing is for big food to make its money. They need to sell you food.
Big food sounds like my dinner.
Well, same thing with big medicine. Yeah. Big medicine, if there are health problems caused by obesity, they want to sell you a medical treatment or a drug or a surgery.
Yeah.
You know, so there's just not the financial incentives to say, why don't you try fasting? Because it's free.
Yeah.
It's easy. No, and no one's making money off of it.
So. But your doctor was
she stood up for her patient's health. Yeah.
Well, doctors aren't the ones that are making I guess I don't know, but
they make some, but it's still not like
Not selling the
try our newest drink. Line of diet products.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So church law, let me just ask you about church law. So we were talking about the church's, the church doesn't want you to hurt yourself or injure yourself or something. So what does church law say about fasting?
So in the Latin rite of the Catholic Church, and it'll be a little different in other rites potentially, and I don't know the details of those, but in the Latin rite, there are 2 days a year that you're obliged to fast, those days being Ash Wednesday and Good Friday. Mm-hmm. These days, the fast is extremely light. It is only a partial fast. You're allowed to have one full meal and some food two other times a day.
Right.
So that's – it's a meal and two snacks. It's barely fasting.
Speak for yourself, Agan. Well,
just being honest about
it. No, yeah.
The other time that canon law requires Latin Rite Catholics to fast is before receiving the Eucharist. In the old days, the Eucharistic fast was from midnight to whenever you received communion. And so that put incentives for priests to say Mass very early in the day.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
But as society has changed, Masses on Sundays and other days have begun to be said later in the day. So they're not first thing in the morning. You have them at noon and in the afternoon and the evening. And so in the 20th century, to account for that fact, rather than make people fast from midnight to 5 p.m. or something, Pope Pius XII changed it to a three-hour fast before receiving communion. And then Paul VI changed it to a one-hour fast. And so again, it's a pretty nominal amount of fasting. But you are supposed to fast for an hour before receiving communion.
Well, which is really easy sometimes. Like if you for a Sunday Mass.
A Sunday Mass, especially if you're driving to – you
just don't eat on the way.
Yeah.
That's almost what it is, which is harder – it's easier said than done sometimes. But yeah, okay. So but on a weekday Mass, if you figure Mass is going to be 25 minutes or something, it's that's basically a half hour of fasting before going to Mass. But it's not a very – but many people I think have forgotten that we are required to fast, even though it's – very small, it's still a requirement.
It is. One thing that some folks may be aware of is there's also a tradition of fasting monastically. So according to the rules of various religious orders, the monks and nuns are supposed to fast. Now, this is also – the same thing though has happened in most monasteries that has happened in regular society. Now, if you like look at the rule of Saint Benedict, which is kind of the foundational rule that's used for basically all the Western religious orders, Benedict prescribes a certain fasting regimen, but it's not used effective. It's for practical purposes. It's not used in monasteries anymore. There was a gentleman though, a priest in France named Adalbert de Vogüé, who wrote a book based on his own experience with fasting. He decided, okay, I'm going to actually try to observe what Saint Benedict said. And he didn't leap into it. He eased into it. He did the same thing I did.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't a big shock to his system. But he found, hey, I can totally do this. This is not a problem at all. And he wrote a book called To Love Fasting, which is actually a quote from Saint Benedict. And so that book is out there. I've got a copy of it. If you want to read about the spiritual dimension of fasting, I'd recommend that book. But basically what Saint Benedict said is that monks should in Easter time get to eat two meals a day and the rest of the year one meal a day. And when precisely they would eat that meal would vary. So in some seasons, they would eat it like either at noon or at 3 p.m. or something like that. But then in Lent, you'd fast till after sundown. So you'd wait till evening to do it. And so I was kind of surprised to learn that because since the meal I eat is in the evening, I've been doing this Benedictine Lenten one meal a day thing for months now and hadn't even realized it.
And what really strikes me about that though, Jimmy, is that like you'll hear lots of people, as a matter of fact, a few people on Facebook today while you're speaking, will talk about getting a headache if they try to fast, feeling they can't concentrate, they're upset if they try to fast. And this thing that you've said several times, get to it gradually. Yeah. It seems to me that's important.
Those are transitional effects. Those don't continue.
Right.
What happens is your body has an adjustment period because you have a certain amount of the technical term for it is glycogen. It's a kind of it's sort of basically blood sugar that's being stored in a liquid form in your liver. And your liver is kind of your temporary energy storage unit. It's kind of – you can think about it like your fridge. You know, you go to your fridge when you need food and so forth. But it's a distinct fuel source from your body fat. Your body fat's more like your deep freeze. You know, it's where you go when your fridge is empty. You want to get something out of the deep freeze. And so what happens when you start fasting is the first thing you burn through is that is the glycogen in your liver. And once that's gone, your body says, okay, the fridge is empty. Now it's time to go to the deep freeze. And then it starts burning body fat.
Okay.
And so there, as you make that transition, that's when you can have some side effects. Like some people have headaches, or that's when you get hungry the most.
Oh, okay.
Because your body is initially thinking, okay, rather than go to the deep freeze, let's just fill up the fridge again. Let's just eat.
Yeah.
But if you don't do that, then it'll say, okay, no, it's time to go to the long-term storage and get the fat out of there. And then your body shifts into fat-burning mode and the transitional things go away. So what I did to avoid the transitional effects is I started eating three meals a day, but I cut out the snacks. And so I just eat the three meals a day. And then I did that for a couple of weeks. And then when I got used to that, I said, okay, breakfast is gone. Because a lot of people skip breakfast anyway. It's easy to do that. And a lot of people do it anyway just because for time reasons. And so then I did that for a couple of weeks. I got used to that. Then I said, okay, I don't want to just drop lunch. So let's move lunch later in the day.
I see.
And so I'd move it a couple hours later and then a couple hours more later. And then once it was within a couple hours of dinner, I dropped lunch. And so because –
so you built up a kind of ability to do this.
Yeah, exactly. I made the transition. It was also probably easier for me because I was doing low carb. Because so I didn't have the big blood sugar swings that carbohydrates give you.
Yeah.
But I did it a step at a time, and it worked really well. And it turns out that's what Father DeVogue did as well. Mm-hmm. He basically did the same thing I did when he began to keep the Benedictine fast more strictly.
And we have to take a break, but I want to ask you this real quick. Do you, if you, like, say you were celebrating, say it's somebody's birthday or something, there's a delicious cake there or something like that. Will you partake of that at all, or have you just given up on that?
I treat that on an ad hoc basis.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes
me too. But does that mean I always eat it?
No.
I'm not sure what ad hoc means, but
I decide on the occasion for this particular occasion.
Yeah.
I will sometimes I'll just skip it. Sometimes I might have a tiny amount. Sometimes I'll eat it normally. Also, like Sundays, it's the Lord's Day. Mm-hmm. So I tend to observe the fast less strictly on Sundays as a way of honoring the Lord's Day. And the same thing would be true perhaps of a major, you know, a solemnity or something.
Yeah.
But individual variations like that are totally fine. It's as long as you're – for health reasons, as long as you get back to what you're doing.
Yeah.
An interruption of a day doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Same thing spiritually. You know, if there's some, you know, it's Easter and you really don't want to fast on Easter.
Yeah.
It's because you really want to celebrate the Lord's resurrection.
Yeah.
Then feast. It's the feast of Easter.
Yeah.
You know, that's not going to harm you spiritually. That, if anything, that'll help you spiritually.
All right. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that. I don't think we fully got into, at least I didn't get all my questions answered about the spiritual dangers inherent in fast or possible to be attached to fasting. So that's the first thing I'll ask you about when we come back. We'll be right back with more fasting with Jimmy Akin on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Catholic Answers. Our success depends on you.
Are you coming to the Catholic Answers Conference this September?
You guys put on a great show, so it's well worth coming.
Very powerful, very motivational and moving.
I think it's awesome. It's been really amazing to get to know people from all across the country.
Every time somebody's speaker finishes, I feel like I want to cry just because of how happy I am.
It's been pretty phenomenal. Very educational, enlightening.
This year's conference is September 28th through the 30th here in beautiful San Diego, and we want to see you there. Seats are still available, but act now because they are going fast.
Call us today at 1-888-291-8000 or visit CatholicAnswersConference.com now and reserve your spot.
This is where it starts, and it definitely has started for me.
Did the Catholic Church add books to the Bible, or did Protestants remove seven books from the Old Testament? In Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger, author Gary Machuda takes you on a fact-filled tour through the history of the Bible, revealing the whole story behind the lost books of the Protestant Old Testament. With the latest information, discourse on crucial issues, and a topical index, Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger is a book that belongs in the library of every serious student of Scripture. Order your copy of Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks so much for being with us. This hour, we're discussing fasting, a topic that I think we avoid. I'm going to come right out and say it. I think we avoid it often, but it is such an important part of the New Testament, an important part of the Old Testament, an important part of religious practice all around the world throughout the whole history of the world. One of the things that's striking me, Jimmy, as you're speaking, and I'm not forgetting that I was going to ask you about spiritual dangers in fasting, but you would think it would be designed this way, but for some reason I'd never noticed, or it didn't connect with me that it was designed this way, that what is good for us spiritually might also be good for us physically, because the Lord loves us.
Yeah, so, and vice versa.
That the fact that, say, we undertake fasting for whichever – I guess since you said vice versa, whether we take on fasting for health reasons, it might benefit us spiritually. It might well.
Yeah.
And whether we take – and if we take on fasting for spiritual reasons, it might
help us
benefit us physically.
Yeah.
So what are the medical benefits? What's the benefits of fasting that I might get?
Oh, well, okay. So before that, I just want to comment on the relationship between the, the physical and spiritual benefits, because sometimes people wonder, well, okay, I need to – they'll say, I need to lose weight or whatever. And if I fast for that reason, does that mean it won't count spiritually?
Oh, Jimmy, that is like the – I'm so glad you raised that point, because I do think a lot of people have that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the answer is it depends. If you – let's say you're a bodybuilder and you never think about God and you're just fasting because you want that perfect six-pack of abs.
Right.
Well, then you're not doing it for any kind of spiritual reason, and it's not going to really have any merit spiritually.
Right.
But if you're someone who says, well, I need to fast for health reasons, but I also want to do this to honor God, well, then it's like anything else you do. I mean, St. Paul says, do everything unto God.
Oh,
so it our whole life takes on a supernatural spiritual orientation if we're doing it for God.
Right.
Even if we're not thinking about it at the moment, as long as we've decided I'm going to do this for God. It's like St. Paul talks about just doing your ordinary work in a way, you know, doing it unto the Lord.
Yeah.
And so this is, you know, fasting is kind of some work. And it's not the kind that earns a living, although it is the kind that saves you money, because you're not buying all that food.
Right.
But you can do any worthy thing, any morally worthy thing. You can do it unto the Lord, and it will have spiritual value. So you don't need to worry that those two things are in opposition somehow.
And what about appeal to the Lord to help you in your fast?
Sure,
is that a
absolutely.
Reasonable thing, you think?
Like,
I'm offering this fast to God, but I need God's help or I can't
Absolutely. I mean, it's like in anything else in life if you're struggling. I mean, it's like suppose you're at work and you're having a hard time just doing your daily work, as people do from time to time. it's totally reasonable to say, oh, God, help me do my work.
Yeah.
Well, if you've chosen to do fasting and you're having some trouble, it's totally fine to say, God, help me with this.
Yeah.
That's totally fine. And you're bringing the Lord into the activity even more when you do that.
So the medical benefits then, if that, since
oh, okay.
we said
– so sure. Yeah. So here's the thing. We're living in an age of overweight and obesity here in America.
Yes.
I went on the – when I was prepping for this show, I went on the National Institutes of Health website. That's a government institution that tracks these things. And according to them, 74% of Americans – 70 – that's three quarters of Americans – are either overweight or obese.
Wow.
Yeah. So 74%, 36%, so more than a third are obese.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, you know, Americans have a reputation for being overweight, but the rest of the world's catching up with us pretty quick.
Yeah.
In the United Kingdom, for example, 64%. Of the population is overweight or obese.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only 10% behind America.
Right.
And even in countries like in Southeast Asia, where there's a tradition of being thinner, actually they're catching up rapidly too.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a global problem.
Right.
And as we know, overweight and obesity can have a bunch of negative health effects over the course of time. They don't show up immediately, but they do over time. So I went to the Center for Disease Control website and looked up what are negative effects of obesity. Well, high blood pressure, heart attacks, strokes, osteoarthritis, sleep apnea, different forms of cancer, depression, anxiety, and a general rise in mortality across all causes.
Yeah.
Also, high blood sugar and type 2 diabetes, which is one you hear a lot about in the news because it's been estimated that within a few years, up to half of the population in America is either going to be diabetic or pre-diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
And diabetes has its own slate of health issues. I looked those up on the Mayo Clinic's website. Those include kidney disease, heart disease, nerve damage, blindness, deafness, and Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Alzheimer's is by some people now being called type 3 diabetes. So there are a load of health issues that are related in one way or another to the problem of overweight and obesity.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, different people have different predispositions based on their family history, their genetics, and their other lifestyle factors. But this is a serious issue, and what I was just incredibly thankful to God for is that my doctor finally convinced me to try this because suddenly I had a tool that
right.
was effective in getting me off of that plateau and has gotten me down to almost a historically normal weight range.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the reasons I wanted to do this show, to talk both about the spiritual side of fasting, but also to let people know if you are one of the three quarters of Americans that is overweight and you've been trying to find a way to deal with it and have not had success with the standard diet advice, this is something you should check out. Especially if you you know, are considering something like bariatric surgery or something, which is basically enforced fasting. You know,
right.
rather than have the surgery, you could just try
you can
this.
Learn to do. That's
yeah.
what fascinates me. It's something you can learn to
yeah.
do, not something like today I am taking on and I'm you know I'll have half a meal later. You know, that's you can learn. You can
yeah.
build up. It's like a formation up
yeah.
to get there.
One of the things I've been doing on Facebook as I've been losing weight is I've been tracking it and letting people know how much I've lost and where I'm at. And that's raised a bunch of questions. Well, how are you doing it? And so I put together a page on my blog for people to go to. It's at jimmyakin.com/fast.
Okay.
And I talk about it there. I answer a bunch of questions. But I've been really surprised at how many people have contacted me and said, I started doing this because you talked about it
mm-hmm.
on Facebook. And so I wanted to talk about it here as well, just to let people know there is hope.
Yeah.
And this is something you can check out. And some people have pointed out to me that, you know, you may have saved lives by talking about this. And so
indeed, right.
I hope that's the case.
Well, what about people who should not fast? Are there people who just shouldn't do this?
There are now. So I have to say, I'm not a doctor and I'm not giving medical advice. If you have any kind of, you know, serious medical issue, you need to talk to your doctor. But the doctors who I am familiar with that have specialized in this, for example, there's a Canadian nephrologist that's a kidney doctor named Jason Fung, who's written a lot about this because he would see his – one of the consequences of diabetes is kidney disease.
Yeah.
So he would have all these people coming in for dialysis who had diabetes, and that led him to research this. And he has said that he thinks, well, there are maybe some people who can't. Almost everybody can. After all, we're designed for it, mm-hmm. to go back to the beginning of our conversation. That's why we get fat in the first place, is to compensate for the times we need to fast. So most people should be able to do it. There are some things you need to watch out for. One of them is if you're on certain medicines, like for blood sugar, mm-hmm. or blood pressure, and you start fasting, guess what happens? Fasting improves your blood sugar and blood pressure. So if you're on medicines to lower your blood sugar or blood pressure and you start fasting, you may need less of those medicines, which is a good thing because it means your blood pressure and blood sugar are getting better.
Right, but if you don't attend to them, you could get in some trouble.
You could go too low, and so that's why you need to do it with doctor supervision.
Yeah. One question for me, the person who has kind of a scrupulous personality, or maybe they feel easily guilty about things and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It seems to me that if maybe one of the reasons we don't talk about fasting is it is in fact a very different world than the medieval world. It's very fast paced. People have a lot of stress and upset and anxiety. Any words for the scrupulous person who maybe if they started to fast and even one little slip up or something is going to be,
So this is a common thing, and it's not just for fasting. It's for any kind of spiritual discipline where someone voluntarily assumes a spiritual discipline, whether it's this or anything else, and then they deviate from that discipline and they worry, have I sinned?
Yeah.
No. As long as it's a voluntary discipline, there's no sin. Now, if you're obliged to fast, let's say the Eucharistic fast, and you say, I don't care about that. I'm just going to go receive anyway, even though I haven't and don't care. Well, okay, that's a sin because you were obliged to fast. But if you're doing something voluntarily, whether it's fasting or some other form of self-denial, you can decide to deviate from that and say, let's say you're avoiding chocolate for Lent. You can say, I'm going to have a chocolate bar today just because I feel like it. That's not a sin. If it's a voluntary restriction you've placed on yourself, then you can voluntarily unrestrict yourself.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be scrupulous. You don't have to worry about that.
Well, we're coming up very close to the top of the hour. Any last words on fasting you'd like to share with people?
No, I just want to encourage people to think about it, see if it's right for them. And if you want more information, you can go to jimmyakin.com/fast.
And our forefathers and mothers knew something, huh?
They did.
They weren't dopes.
Yeah. Jesus did too. He said, when you fast, not if you fast.
Oh, yeah. You didn't mention that. Oh, that's a great point about Jesus. All right. Well, thanks for joining us this hour. Next hour, Dr. Cary Gress will be here to talk about Mary and about how to fight like Mary in the modern world. Well, you may say, well, she's not a fighter, that Mary. Well, maybe spiritual fighting is what we're talking about. All that coming up right after this on Catholic Answers Live.